Hello, everyone. Welcome once again to the Ways of Faith podcast. This is Father Steve. Today is September 23rd, and it is the memorial, of Saint Pius of Pietrelcina, also known commonly as Padre Pio. Padre Pio was a well-known priest from the 1900s, died in the year 1968 in Italy. He's well-known for his incredible spiritual wisdom. People would come from all over to seek his spiritual insight, to go to confession with him. And he also is known for the fact that the Lord allowed him to suffer with him in a particular way by him having received the stigmata, which is the physical manifestation on his hands of the wounds from the nails of Christ. So he had these bleeding wounds on both of his hands as a way that the Lord allowed him to share in Christ's sufferings. And so that's why you often see pictures of Padre Pio and his hands are wrapped in cloth because of the fact that he had to cover them up in order to celebrate Mass or whatever it might be. And so we thank God for Padre Pio, his wisdom, his holiness. He was very close to the Lord, and spoke often about prayer and the sacrifice of the Mass. And he himself was incredibly devoted to the Holy Eucharist. So as we celebrate his feast day today, it's a good opportunity for us ourselves to renew our own devotion to prayer and to the Holy Eucharist. I'd like to continue our discussion on the sacrament of marriage. And today we're going to do some definitions, okay? So today we're going to kind of get into a little bit of the meat of the sacrament of marriage, so to say, kind of pull apart what it is, what makes marriage, etc. Okay, as I've said before, marriage is a little bit more complicated because of the fact that it deals with two people who receive the sacrament instead of just one, okay? So let's talk a little bit about that, and what I'm taking mostly for information is directly from the Church's Code of Canon Law, which is the official law book of the Catholic Church. And if you're interested or curious and you want to read more or look it up yourself, all you have to do is a Google search on the internet for Code of Canon Law. Canon spelled like just like the artillery piece, C-A-N-O-N, Code of Canon Law. And then you'll find it's laid out in individual canons, kind of like the catechism is laid out in individual paragraphs. We're talking about, or we're referring to Canon 1055, and going kind of from there through the next, 10 or 15 canons or so. It talks about the sacrament of marriage. Now, this is talking about it more from a law perspective as far as the church's kind of determination over time of the properties of marriage, what makes a marriage, what is a marriage. So there is some theological discussion in the Code of Canon Law and in this section on marriage, but it's focusing more kind of on the legal side of things as far as legal definitions and terms. Okay, and we're going to talk about that. So what is marriage? At least what is marriage, especially in the Christian context? Although this definition, as you may recall from my last podcast, I made a distinction between a natural marriage and a sacramental marriage. So this definition of marriage that the Code of Canon Law gives in Canon 1055, paragraph 1, is a general definition that could apply easily to both a natural marriage, so between two non-Christians, two Buddhists, two Jewish people, and also to Christians. It's kind of the general definition of this is what marriage is and nothing else, okay? So what does it say? It says the matrimonial covenant, and that word covenant is important. I'll come back to that, by which a man and a woman establish between themselves a partnership of the whole of life and which is ordered by its nature to the good of the spouses and the procreation and education of offspring, has been raised by Christ, the Lord, to the dignity of a sacrament between the baptized. All right? So this is what I talked about last time, in the sense of the sacrament, or the sacrament of marriage being something that the Lord took a natural institution of marriage, and then for Christians, for baptized Christians, elevated it to the level of a sacrament of the church, so that it is a dispenser of God's grace and life. Okay? A lot was said in that definition. A lot was said. So let's go back to it a little bit. The matrimonial covenant. Okay, first of all, we use the word covenant, which is stronger, you could say, than contract. Marriage is a contract between two people, but it's more than that. A covenant is a much more kind of in-depth form of contract, where it's not just a legal, a binding legal agreement, but it is a gift of the life of the person, right? I enter into a covenant with you, you know? And secondly, by which a man and a woman establish between themselves. So, of course, this is where the church gets her teaching, which is directly from the Lord, that a true and valid marriage, whether it's natural or sacramental, can only ever exist between one man and one woman, not multiple men and women, not between one man and another man, or one woman and another woman. That's not how God has made us. He created marriage to be a covenant relationship between one member of one sex of the human race and one member of the other sex of the human race, one man and one woman, okay? And listen to this language, because it's important. It says that the matrimonial covenant by which a man and a woman establish between themselves a partnership of the whole of life. Okay? Let's look at that. So first it says that they establish it between themselves, and that's really important because marriage is very unique in this way, right? All of the other sacraments, all of the other six sacraments of the church are celebrated by or presided over by an ordained minister, except for baptism in emergency situations. Anyone can baptize in a true emergency when someone is in danger of death and has never been baptized and needs to be baptized, okay? But in normal circumstances, the other six sacraments are celebrated by and administered by an ordained person, a deacon, a priest, or a bishop, okay? Marriage is different. In marriage, the husband and the wife, the man and the woman, bestow the sacrament or administer the sacrament to each other. So the priest, you know, we use it as like common parlance, common language to say, you know, oh yeah, Father so-and-so married us, right? When a couple's referring to their wedding day. Well, that's fine. I mean, we all know what that means, but it's technically not correct. Because the priest does not marry the couple. The couple marries each other. They marry themselves. The priest is there to witness it officially on behalf of the church to make sure that the proper celebration, and that means, you know, the proper words are used and things go as they are supposed to go for us to recognize it as a good and valid marriage, and then to receive their consent on behalf of the church and to, you know, basically sign off on it and say, yep, okay, they are married, all right? And so the man and the woman in marriage bestow the sacrament on each other. And that is done through the exchange of vows. Okay. Now, what is entered into is what the code calls a partnership of the whole of life. And that doesn't just mean a partnership that is lifelong. It means the whole of life, and that means every aspect of the person's life, they become partners. So marriage is a gift of the entire self, okay? So that's why the church is going to very strongly resist any kind of notion of marriage that might pop up in different cultures or different societies or different fads or fashions of, you know, a marriage that is a partial marriage. Marriage, by its definition, is the whole of life. Again, here, not referring necessarily to it being, you know, lifelong or until death do us part. That's another aspect of marriage. The whole of life means every part of my life. I give myself, I enter into a partnership with my spouse. So that means physically, it means mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We are joined together as spiritual partners to help each other on the way to heaven. We are partners psychologically to care for each other's psychological and emotional needs. We are partners physically to give ourselves to each other in sexual intercourse, to provide for spiritual need, or excuse me, physical needs of sharing and giving love and the joy of love between husband and wife. And so the partnership is supposed to be for the whole of life. Finances, economic situation, work, raising children, the whole of life. The two have become one. And once the two have become one, you can't separate them back out into two. And they don't truly become one if they don't give of their entire selves. Okay? So then, the Code of Canon Law is going to give us the two principal reasons for marriage. Right? Two principal reasons, or we use the word ends, E-N-D-S, the reason for marriage. Okay? And even though sometimes people in society who don't know the Catholic Church's teaching think otherwise, Catholics do not just get married to have children, right? In other words, the purpose of marriage is not just for the procreation of children and raising children and having babies, okay? We, as Catholics, sometimes are stereotyped that way. Oh, well, you Catholics, you put up with marriage or sex because it's the way to bring about children. That's not what the Church teaches. At least, that's not what the Church teaches in her Code of Canon Law as presented to us here today, right? There are two ends or two purposes. Now, one of them certainly is the procreation and education of children. That is so core to marriage that new life is created by the acts of making love between husband and wife. It's so core to marriage itself that it's the purpose for marriage. And we know that at an instinctual level, right? When a young couple gets married, typically they're planning to raise a family together, to have children together. In fact, it would be a very odd thing for a young couple who still is very fertile and capable of having children to enter into marriage, but then to enter into marriage with the intention of never having any children. Okay? In fact, the Church would say that that could be potentially grounds for an annulment should the marriage fall apart. They went into the marriage, one or both of them, of the parties, fully intending never to be open to having any children, you know, fully intending to not have children, to do whatever it takes to prevent having children. That is such a core part of marriage. Now, it's the way that we know that it's not the only part of marriage or the only reason for marriage is to have, it's not the case that the only reason that we have marriage is to have babies is because of the fact that I have celebrated many weddings as a priest with couples who are beyond childbearing years, okay? They're not able to have children. The woman is beyond her years of being able to conceive a child, but they can still get married, okay? The second reason or the second purpose of marriage, of the sacrament of marriage in general, is the good of the spouses. So it's both the procreation and education of children and the good of the spouses. Okay? The good of the spouses is a very general term, but it basically means that I marry this person so as to love them, which, of course, remember, love is to will the good of the other, right? And act always as best I can towards their good, towards their spiritual, emotional, psychological, and physical good. I am in love with this person in the sense that I want to give my life at their service, to help them, to share my life with them, to raise a family together with them, to do everything that I can to help them to live a good and holy life, to be their partner through life for their good and also them for my good. Okay? So those are the two purposes of marriage, the good of the spouses, and we get that, by the way, directly from the book of Genesis, right? When God has created Adam, he says, it is not good for the man to be alone. It is not good for the man to be alone. I will create a suitable partner for him. And then he creates woman. And so there's a goodness in the wholeness that comes in the marital relationship where the two become one. Okay? And the reason for that is several, but one of them is because that's how we on earth imitate in our lives the community of persons that God is, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who are perfectly loving towards one another, giving of themselves to each other and receiving that love. Husband and wife imitate that Trinitarian love here on earth through marriage, and specifically through the sacrament of marriage for Christians. Okay? Then, if you go on to Canon 1056, it lists the essential properties of marriage. So we know what the two purposes of marriage are, why people get married. And then now the church is going to give us two properties of marriage, that is, what marriage has to have, or what marriage consists of in order for it to be marriage, right? One is unity, and connected to that is fidelity. The other is indissolubility. So unity means that I marry this one person and only this one person. So this is where the church is saying marriage that is polygamy, where you have one man, for example, who has multiple wives, that's not marriage. That's not marriage. It can't be. You can't be married to more than one person at a time, no matter what the state might say, no matter what other cultural practices might say. That's not how God made us. God made marriage to be a relationship that is unique and lifelong and of the whole of life that's entered into by one man and one woman for the rest of their lives. Okay? So unity in the sense of when a person gets married, they are saying, I choose you to the exclusion of everyone else. Right? And intimately connected to that, of course, then the result of that or the fruit of that is fidelity, which means that obviously the husband and the wife are faithful to one another. They do not give themselves, whether it be sexually or even, you know, at a deep level emotionally, to another man or to another woman. Their gift of self is reserved for their spouse. Right? The other property being indissolubility, which means that the marriage bond that is created is indissoluble. And that word is used on purpose. It means cannot be dissolved, right? Which is good because that teaches us something about marriage, that if something can't be dissolved, that means there's a real thing there that exists and that can't be taken apart or made to disappear in some way. Okay, that real thing that exists is a spiritual bond between a man and a woman, Christians who are married and who have consummated the marriage. Okay? I'm going to get to that in a second. A marriage that has been ratified, that means where they've exchanged vows, okay, in the presence of the church, according to the church's rule, and then has also been consummated after the vows have been exchanged, that is, of course, that the husband and wife have had sexual intercourse, cannot be dissolved by anyone at all except God, which he does when one of or the other dies. Okay? It can't be dissolved by a priest. It can't be dissolved by the Pope. It can't be dissolved by the couple themselves. Because they enter into the marriage saying, until death do us part. It's a lifelong partnership. And so the church honors that, even if the couple doesn't. So even if they get a civil divorce, the church would say, yes, okay, so in the eyes of the state, you are no longer married, but in the eyes of the church, you still are, because you stood at that altar and you said, I want to enter into an indissoluble union with you, with this person, that lasts until one of us should die. And the church holds them to that. And the reason is because, again, a real and true spiritual bond is made at that moment between that husband and that wife. And that bond cannot be dissolved by any human power, not even the couple themselves. So even if they mutually and amicably, you know, in a friendly manner, agreed to separate and divorce, they don't have the power to dissolve that bond. It is irreversible and irrevocable. All right. Now, immediately, I think one of the questions that Catholics may often have is, well, then what about an annulment? I mean, isn't that what an annulment is? An annulment is just dissolving the marriage bond. You know, it's like the Catholic form of divorce so that a couple can get married again. The short answer to that is no. The longer answer to that is going to have to wait, because it's a longer answer and we'll run out of time for today. In fact, I will try to dive into that question, since we're talking about consent and all of those things. I will try to dive into that question next time, okay? Until then, God bless you, and in all things, may you know God's love for you this day and always. Take care.